Hey, listeners, a bipolar, a schizophrenic, and a podcast is now the Not Crazy Podcast. Same feed, different name. Hosted by Gabe Howard and Jackie Zimmerman. Search for Not Crazy or visit us at psychcentral.com/notcrazy. In the meantime, enjoy this legacy episode of BSP, and we hope you'll check out the new Not Crazy Podcast.
For reasons that utterly escape everyone involved, you're listening to A Bipolar, A Schizophrenic, and A Podcast. Here are your hosts, Gabe Howard and Michelle Hammer.
Hi, everyone. You're listening to A Bipolar, A Schizophrenic, and A Podcast. My name is Gabe Howard, and I live with bipolar disorder.
Hi, I'm Michelle Hammer, and I'm schizophrenic.
Straight up schizo, straight out of Compton.
Straight up. That's right. Yeah, totally. Out of Compton. Straight out of New York. That's right.
Straight out of New York. Well, you were born and raised in New York City, right?
Not technically, sure.
Well, I mean,
close enough.
Most people, when they're not something, they don't claim it. But there's a few things that if you're close enough, you're like, oh yeah, I'm from New York City. So you're not from New York City, but you tell everybody that you are.
I currently live in New York City, and if I explained, well, I'm actually from the first county right above the city, not far from the Bronx, so if I drive about 20 minutes, I enter the Bronx, so if you really want to get technical, I'm very close, but not technically New York City. Some people would call it upstate. Some people would say it's not upstate if you're from where I'm from. It's an argument that we have a lot.
Because people from New York City think that you're a poser.
No, they would say I'm from upstate.
But not from New York City.
Right.
So Schizophrenic NYC should actually be Schizophrenic Upstate New York.
No, because it exists in the city. Because I live in Astoria, Queens now. And it exists and sells all the merchandise in New York City.
This is extraordinarily complicated.
I don't really think it's that complicated, Gabe. And I don't know why you're so confused about where I live. Because I live in Queens, which is one of the five boroughs of New York City.
So it's schizophrenic.queens.
Queens is part of New York City, which is NYC. Do you get it now?
Are you the king of Queens?
No, I'm not the king of Queens.
Michelle, today we are talking about social anxiety. And the reason that we went through this god-awful exercise is because every time we meet people, one of the kind of the social questions that people always ask is, you know, where are you from? I mean, they start with your name and then it's,
yes,
where are you from?
Yes.
You have it much worse than I do. No matter where you go in the country, people feel that they understand New York City because of television and movies, etc.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then they tell me, oh, I visited New York City. I was in that area. Oh, it was by this. Do you know that? I rode the subway one time. It was very dirty. And I'm like, oh, yes, yes, yes. The subway's dirty. Yes, yes. Oh, I was there 20 years ago. Well, you know what? I wasn't there 20 years ago. So I really can't tell you about it, what it was like 20 years ago. I'm sorry.
I don't have that problem at all. I'm like, I'm from Columbus. And they're like, we don't give a shit.
Yeah, I was watching like you on a Facebook Live and you're like, yeah, I'm from like a really big city and stuff. And I'm like, you're from Columbus. Stop saying that,
it's
Gabe.
It's the 14th largest city in the country.
14th, not even top 10. So stop saying that, 14th. But don't be proud of that, Gabe.
But it's a big city.
You right? Walk out of your house. How long does it take you to get to a store?
To get to me?
Walking.
Well, I don't know, because I'm never going to walk.
Exactly, because it's that far. You want to know how long it takes me to get to any kind of establishment once I walk out my door? Less than 30 seconds.
But in my old apartment that I called my pod, 30 seconds and I'd be within a whole bunch of places. I lived there on purpose because I wanted to be able to walk to the pizza place, the gas station, etc. I know you call gas stations bodegas. I apologize.
No, gas stations are not bodegas. You will never understand the concept of what a bodega is, Gabe.
It is true. I never will. But interestingly enough, you feel like you suffer from social anxiety. And I feel like I suffer from social anxiety, which makes a lot of people confused because they can't figure out how two people as lively
and boisterous
and loud as Gabe and Michelle can be anxious in social situations. And that goes an extra step for you because people are like, my God, you live in the biggest city in the country. And like you said, you walk outside and you're at an establishment. So you can't get away from people.
You know, having like social anxiety, you kind of like thinking, it's almost a little bit of like paranoia that you're nervous to be around new people or you don't know what people are really gonna say. But when you're in New York City, you can say something to somebody and if it's stupid, you'll probably never see that person ever again. So it doesn't really matter.
And you feel that this is why it helps. Like it's that anonymity that makes you feel good. Whereas right. when we're at a conference or when we're giving a speech somewhere, everybody knows your name.
Exactly. They're like, and that is so much more nerve-wracking.
Because if you make a mistake,
everybody knows who I am.
Everybody knows that Michelle Hammer is the one that accidentally said fuck off on stage when she was at the Catholic College.
Yes, but I never actually did that. He just made that up.
That one's a lie.
Yeah, that's the lie.
Later in the episode, I will tell a truth and you will know it's a truth because Michelle will not say a word. But that actually did happen to a colleague. He said fuck on stage and like everybody went nuts and he was just like, why is this a problem? And he wasn't embarrassed by it because I just don't think he has the ability to get embarrassed, but he obviously didn't think that it would offend anybody and it did. So now he's kind of back on his heels apologizing for a comment that it was just a throwaway comment to him. And that's kind of how you and I feel. To us, we're just like up on stage saying something, but if the audience hears it wrong or feels about it wrong, or we just slip up and say something that maybe, you know, just, I really like the fuck example because we can say fuck in New York City and nobody's going to care. But
oh, you don't even know the things I've overheard people say in New York City.
Right.
It's hilarious. There was once a website called Overheard in New York, and it was just all of these conversations that were ridiculous that people overheard in New York.
But if you get hired in, let's say, like a very conservative state, you know, like a Mormon college in Utah, you're not going to swear, right? You're going to put on...
Oh, no. Well, I mean, that would be hilarious if I got hired at a Mormon college. If any Mormon colleges would like to hire me, just let you know I'm available.
And she promises not to swear.
And I will not swear or drink soda or coffee or, you know, all that Mormon stuff. That's like all I know about it. I've known one Mormon my entire life. She was a very nice girl. She was sweet. Loved her. But that would be really funny. So Mormon colleges, hit me up. I will not swear.
So that's what I mean, though. You know that you can swear in New York City, no problem, right?
Pretty much as long as the, you know, it's not children around. But I mean, many times I've cursed in front of children and then I'm like, oh, there's a child.
And the child probably like corrects your swear and tells you like the new one.
Well, they look at you with a dirty look like, mommy, that lady just cursed.
I can see that. It's like, mommy, that bitch just swore. Wait, what? But so that's what I mean, though. New York City, you can swear. Utah, don't swear. It's the middle ground. It's the middle ground that messes us up, where we're not sure. So we don't know how to behave. And that's where the nervous comes in, right?
Exactly. Sometimes you just don't know what the right social norm is. So you don't know how to act or who to talk to or who's, maybe you're like, is that person really important? Wait, what did I say to them? Maybe I said something stupid to them and then you're all anxious because of that. And then you're like, you want to go talk to somebody else and somebody, you know, interrupts you and they want to really talk to you, but you don't want to talk to them at all. But then you realize that you really messed up and should have spoken to that person in the first place.
Exactly. And it's not because... It's not because you're sucking up to big names or, you know, brown nosing or kissing ass. It's because maybe that's the person who hired you. Because we don't know what a lot of these people look like. You know, we get hired over email and phone and we're like, oh, Julie, thank you. We'll send over the contract. They know what we look like because they've seen our headshots. They've seen us on social media. We never know what these people look like.
Never. Yeah. Never. People have come to my pop-up shop. Hi, it's so nice to finally meet you. Hi, you too. Who are you?
Exactly. But then they get in, then sometimes they're like, oh, I understand. You meet a lot of people. This is your job. You travel around. But other times they're offended. They're like, we hired you. We've talked on the phone a lot. This is what causes my social anxiety. I'm not worried about purposely hurting somebody's feelings because I'm a really nice guy. I'm worried about the accident. The misunderstanding.
The accidents?
Yeah.
You know, I kind of looked up the definition of social anxiety, and it just said symptoms may include excess fear of situations in which one may be judged, worry about embarrassment or humiliation, or concern about offending someone. So it really is, to me, it seems like paranoia to me, doesn't it?
I guess it's not paranoia, though, because isn't, like, paranoia worse? Like, isn't
I guess paranoia,
paranoia
like, yeah,
like
yeah,
your mom's
but
trying
it's,
to kill you.
I suppose it's
kill
just
you, then
it's
Gabe's
more like a
trying to kill you.
I guess, but it's more like a social kind of a paranoia in a sense like that. You know, you're afraid of being humiliated. You know, you're afraid of what you just said. You're afraid of how you're acting, or did you act well? It's just kind of dwelling on things after they happened because you don't know if you did the right thing. Let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsor.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. Secure, convenient, and affordable online counseling. All counselors are licensed, accredited professionals. Anything you share is confidential. Schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist whenever you feel it's needed. A month of online therapy often costs less than a single traditional face-to-face session. Go to BetterHelp.com/PsychCentral and experience 7 days of free therapy to see if online counseling is right for you. BetterHelp.com/PsychCentral.
And we're back talking social anxiety.
I really like what you brought up there, Michelle, the dwelling. Do you ever, like, after the event is over, after the conference day is over, after the speech is over, whatever, do you lay awake at night and replay the entire day in your head looking for mistakes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But the thing is, I go delusional. I think about the day. And then I start making lies up about the day. Then I start believing the lies about the day. And then I just go crazy.
Wow, that's... What's your, like, coping mechanism for that? I do part of that. You know, before I was treated, before I got, you know, lots of therapy and lots of medication and lots of help, I did that exact same thing. One of the things that really helped me was, you know, therapy and medication. It really helped tamper down those delusions to the point where I don't have them anymore. So when I spiral out of control, it's, oh, I was talking to Jane and I told Jane that she looked very nice today. And then I think Jane looked to the left. And I know that looking to the left means that I offended Jane. Oh my God, I shouldn't have said that. She thinks I was hitting on her. Oh, I didn't mean to hit on her. Oh my God, she thinks that I'm a creepy pervert. What's going on? And I start to feel really, really bad, like I owe Jane an apology. In the old days, I would have sent Jane this rambling email that made absolutely no sense and just really caused a lot of problems. New Gabe just sits on it and does nothing because I don't want to sound like a crazy person. But you believe that it's true. So now you wake up and you no longer are curious as to whether or not you sexually harassed Jane. You believe that you did it.
Sometimes I do believe. Sometimes I'm not sure. Sometimes I'm confused. But then I try to verify things with people. I ask friends. I ask people who were there. I try to set up a timeline to see if things really did happen that way or if they didn't happen that way. Because sometimes the conversation that I have with somebody, I change the entire conversation to something else completely. So I try to figure out what is real, what makes sense, what was actually happening. But what's worse about it is that it has sometimes that delusions, they'll happen for things that happened years ago that I can't verify if they're real or not.
So what
am I supposed to do then?
Like, maybe the reason that you lost touch with your friend Bob isn't just because time marches on and Bob got a job and had a couple of kids. Maybe you offended Bob.
You never know. Who knows? I never know. Things just make up their own stories and things don't make any sense anymore. And I don't know what's real. I don't know what's happening, but I don't know. When we're talking about social anxiety, and I don't know how we got on this.
But this is social anxiety, because this is one of the reasons that you're so nervous to talk to people, because you're nervous that you're afraid that you're going to make a mistake. But then you're nervous that you're going to think you made a mistake and then dwell on it and it's going to ruin the next day. This is the spiral that happens to me and a lot of people with social anxiety. Even if we don't mess up during the event that we were worried about, we've convinced ourselves later on that we've made mistakes.
Yeah, that we've made tons of mistakes.
I really like what you said about checking in with the people around you. As you know, that's something that we do to each other a lot. I'll ask you when we get off stage, hey, did you think that went okay? You'll ask me, hey, did I do a good job? And we kind of have a little, you know, like decompress, or, you know, we just kind of go over everything together. Now, we trust each other. You know, right. Michelle trusts Gabe, Gabe trusts Michelle. But what if you don't have a person that you trust? Because, you know, people could exploit this a lot. You know, it's a cutthroat world out there. You can't just ask a random panelist, hey, did I do okay? Because maybe that panelist wants your job. So they'll be like, oh, no, Michelle, you offended a bunch of people. You really sucked.
Wow, yeah, you're right about that one.
But maybe they're telling the truth. Maybe you did suck. How do you know when to trust people and when to not? Like, isn't that a whole nother layer?
I mean, sometimes I just have confidence, and if somebody tells me I did a bad job, I'm just that mostly will just make me angry, and I'll be like, I did better than you.
And on one hand, that kind of confidence is good, but you can't just ignore people who give constructive criticism or you'll never improve.
But is that constructive criticism, though, if I ask somebody next to me and they're like, nah, I think you did really bad?
Well, it's not constructive, but it could still be true.
I don't know. I've been on panels before, and I mean, based on questions coming to me, questions from the audience, stuff like that, you can base it on that. I mean, if you're getting more questions from the audience than the rest of the people, don't you think you've done better?
Well, maybe, except that, as you know, some of the most viral videos in the world are of people failing. That doesn't mean you did a good job just because a ton of people are watching you get, you know, hit in the nuts falling off of a bike.
Well, I understand that, but the questions aren't negative. The questions are because they're interested and they want to learn more.
But you said earlier that you have a problem running it through accurately. You're like, I was asked 4 questions that were very positive, that were very interesting. For me, I would say that part was good, but my answer sucked.
That can happen. That can happen. I might think, like, I should have said this instead. I should have said that. This is what I should have done there. This is what I should have done there. But use it as a more constructive way for next time. Trying to turn all the delusions into more a positive way. It's when I can't turn the delusion into anything positive that where it just makes me go, aah! When you can't change the past that you really want to change.
And of course, we still have to go on to the next gig.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter how badly we feel about the last one and or whether it's true or false. You're only as good as your next gig. That's the life of everything. Our podcast is only as good as our previous episode. Our writing is only as good as our previous writing. Your clothing line is only as good as your last piece of art. Wouldn't it be great if we could just make one podcast and just be famous forever or give one speech and just live off the residuals for life? Even Friends had to make, what, over 200 episodes over a decade? If that show would have started to suck in the middle, it would have just gotten canceled. It would have been the Drew Carey Show. Started off hot, fizzled right out. But it didn't. It stayed good. How do we stay good?
How do we stay good? Confidence!
How do we stay confident?
For every negative thing we think, we have to say 3 positive things about ourselves.
Excellent. I know for a fact that you are thinking something negative about me right now. So now you, Michelle Hammer, have to say 3 positive things about me.
I was saying in self-reflection.
Oh, so you can't even think of 3 positive things to say.
No, you interpreted it in the wrong way, in yourself. If you think something negative about yourself, then you have to say 3 positive things about yourself. Not me about you,
but
you about you.
But that's difficult. Let's say that I can't think of 3 positive things, and I say to my friend Michelle, man, I can't think of 3 positive things about myself. Will you help me? What would you say?
You are not bald. You are very tall, and you have a lovely wife and dog.
The 3 positives about Gabe Howard. I am not bald, I am very tall, and I have a lovely wife and dog.
What were you looking for?
Honestly, Michelle, that might have been perfect. A conference that I was at recently, you know, it didn't go so well. I know that it was not the best that it could be. So just establish that as a baseline fact. And this is one of those conferences that you have to apply for. And now, because of that, I can't apply next year. Because if I apply next year and I don't get in, I will go back a whole nother year and decide the reason that I didn't get in is because of what happened. And I can't live with that. Like, that's just too much anxiety, that's too much pressure, that's too much stress. So to save myself all of that, I'm just not going to apply. And now the reason that I didn't get in is because...
Yeah, it's under your control.
Right. Sometimes it's worth it to risk the rejection. You know, when I asked you if you wanted to host this podcast with me and you said no, that was worth it. And then when I circled back a month later and gave you more data to why I thought this would be a good idea, that was worth the risk. And even if you would have said no, I would have felt good about it. But sometimes I just can't risk the rejection. And this is one of those examples of where it's just not worth it for me. If I get in, I'll be like, oh, yay, they still love me. But if I don't, I'll spend the rest of my life thinking, man, I fucked it up so bad and I can never recover from it. And that will seep into other areas.
No, I completely understand. I feel the same way too. So many times I've gotten emails like, oh, we're looking for a speaker. Please send us your rate and everything. Send them my rate. Crickets, never hear back.
One of the things that helps me with that is I learned that the average person gets 3 quotes for a speaker, which means they may have rejected me, but they also rejected somebody else statistically. Also, I always write this lovely letter back. Thank you so very much. I completely understand. Please keep me in mind for next year. I'm very easy to work with. I understand that you went a different way. And then I kind of put them in my calendar to follow up with next year, because I believe from a sales cycle standpoint that there is no such thing as no.
Isn't that really how you found out who I was? Somebody asked you about like 2 different schizophrenic advocates, you know, choose between the two. And yep. I was the one that didn't get it.
Yes.
I got you.
You got me.
Hey, I didn't get the speech, but I got you.
I think it worked out.
Yeah, it worked out. And that girl that got the speech, she wasn't even schizophrenic.
What the hell? They hired a non-schizophrenic to give a speech?
No, she just has a schizophrenic mom. Oh, it's so terrible to have schizophrenic moms. Living with a schizophrenic is so terrible. Let's hear about that. Let's not hear about it from a schizophrenic person.
I mean, in fairness, when you stay at my house for 4 days, it's pretty awful. I don't think that has anything to do with your schizophrenia. It might have to do with your slobbiness and your crazy.
Listen, your dog is crazier than me.
That's true. My dog still carries around your sock.
Yeah, seriously. I don't carry my socks in my mouth.
Wouldn't it be funny? I realize this isn't true, but since you brought up the dog, after you leave, my dog always finds one of your socks. I don't know how this happens. I don't know if it gets slipped under the bed or whatever, but he carries around the damn sock. And we just let him because we don't care. But I have this idea in my head that all the way back in New York City, Michelle is carrying around some dog toy of Pepe's. And the two of you are just like cosmically connected. Are you carrying around Pepe's tennis ball?
Not that I'm aware of, but now that I know about this, I'm going to take something of his. I have a lock of his hair, actually.
You don't have a lock of his hair.
In my locket.
In your locket. You don't even have a locket.
How do you know? Lockets are still in style.
No, they're not. Even Blanche would say, oh, honey.
Blanche bought me a locket when I was little. It was gold and then I bit it.
It's been so long since we've referenced Blanche, you realize that new listeners have no idea who we're talking about.
Blanche is my grandmother.
And she was the best grandma.
She was a good grandma. She told me, save a penny here, save a penny there, next thing you know, you got a dollar.
Blanche loved me. She said that of Michelle's friends, I was her favorite.
You never met Blanche.
But she would have said that.
Well, she would have only liked you if you were in a union.
My father was in a union.
Okay, we can stop talking about this because it's uninteresting.
It very much is, yes. All right, we need a closing.
What I see about social anxiety online is that it starts during the teenage years and it gets better as people get older. So apparently we still have social anxiety when Google says we shouldn't.
Well,
so Google,
I mean,
Google,
Dr. Google knows best.
Apparently Google knows best and we're not supposed to have that social anxiety because we're too old for it. Can it be cured? There is no cure, says Google.
There's no cure for schizophrenia, bipolar, depression, et cetera. But Michelle, sincerely, we both suffer from social anxiety, yet we do this job. We get out there in public. What is the message that you want to give somebody who's listening to this and their social anxiety is so bad at the moment that they are unwilling to leave the house or they're unwilling to even, like, you know, go to McDonald's or Starbucks and get a Diet Coke or a cup of coffee? Because a lot of our listeners, they think that we don't suffer from this stuff because they see us out there. They don't know that we've just managed to push through. What is your number one tip for somebody to push through that social anxiety and get to the other side? Because let's face it, we do adore being on that stage. We do love meeting people. It can be hard for us, but it is worth it because we love it a lot. Even you, and you hate everything.
You know, it is hard. And a lot of people ask me, like, how do you get on stage and talk? It seems so nerve-wracking. People say they'd be so nervous. It makes me nervous. Sometimes you just take a deep breath and you just go for it. And that's how I get on stage and do the thing. And almost if you pretend that you really know what you're talking about, people will believe you really know what you're talking about. If you just have confidence, if you believe in yourself and you believe what you're saying and everything that you're doing is the right thing, it can be okay. If you don't want to leave your room, if you don't want to leave your house, there's always the internet. You can speak to people online. Little baby steps.
It is a fake it until you make it, right?
Fake it till you make it.
And I really like the buddy system. I understand that if you're kind of a shy person and you have anxiety, you have social anxiety, that you wouldn't want to go out alone. Because being in a room full of people where you know nobody, that's scary. So, you know, bring along somebody. Before I met Michelle, I brought my friend Lisa. And she was always very, very helpful. In fact, some of my first speeches, I just gave them to Lisa. There was a whole bunch of other people in the room, but I just made eye contact with Lisa. And Lisa would give me, you know, nice feedback, and she would help me. So, you know, maybe on a lower level, just grab your friend, go out for coffee, and maybe go to a busy restaurant.
That's interesting. When I give speeches, I look at the back of the room. I don't look at any of the people. I look towards the back of the room.
That's what I do. Well, depending on where I'm at, I either look at the back of the room or I look at the middle of the room. I've decided that I can gather more data on how I'm doing as a speaker by looking at the middle. Because see, the back, they're sitting in the back because they don't care. They didn't care the minute they sat down. The people in the front are way too enthusiastic. They're so excited they sat up front. So they're going to love you no matter what you do. You can holler at your boy, come out like a boxer and fall over, and they're going to love you. But the middle of the room, they've decided, I don't know how I feel about this guy. So the middle of the room is usually where I keep my gaze.
Oh, I actually meant the back wall.
Literally the back wall? Does the wall give you positive feedback, Michelle?
I try not to look at the people. They make me anxious.
Michelle, I love working with you because in spite of your outward projection of confidence, it does take work and you are nervous when you do it and you do push through it every day. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't work out, but most of the times it does. And I really like that you don't beat yourself up when things go poorly, even though maybe you should.
I should?
Listen, only one of us has been thrown off a plane. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this episode of A Bipolar, A Schizophrenic, and A Podcast. If you liked this show, please share it on social media. Head over to iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you found this and leave us a review. Actually, type words. For some reason, the internet likes the words. And finally, you can go to psychcentral.com/BSP. Look for a little logo that says Ask Us Questions. Click on it, ask us questions, and we might use it for a future episode. We will see you next time.
I'm nervous.
You've been listening to A Bipolar, A Schizophrenic, and A Podcast. If you love this episode, don't keep it to yourself. Head over to iTunes or your preferred podcast app to subscribe, rate, and review. To work with Gabe, go to GabeHoward.com. To work with Michelle, go to Schizophrenic.nyc. For free mental health resources and online support groups, head over to PsychCentral.com. The show's official website is PsychCentral.com/BSP. You can email us at show@psychcentral.com. Thank you for listening and share widely.
Well, I thought we were talking about social anxiety.
We
today.
Are. Everything that we talked about was social anxiety related. Why do you think
was it really?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know. I thought we went off on 5 million tangents
No,
today.
Everything was social anxiety. 100%. Ruminating about it later and turning into a delusion. Everything followed. We had a couple of bad jokes that didn't land that need cut out. But no, it was social anxiety the whole time.
Well, okay. We should press stop.
Oh, fuck. Yeah. Sorry.
One, two, three.